Well, welcome everyone to episode number 15 of the Roundtable. We're excited to get back with you. We missed last week, so we apologize for that. But we have a special treat this week. We're missing Jenny, our co-host, but we have Nick Kopke with us here today. Nick's going to tell you a little bit about who he is, but I'm really excited that we get the opportunity to have Nick on, and I'll kind of go in a little bit greater depth. But I've known Nick for a little while, and Nick's been a part of our men's group that we're having out at Tad's house, and so it's been exciting to have him be a part of it and share his insight and wisdom with the group. And so today he's going to tell us a little bit about him and his life and what's going on, and hopefully together, which is what we try to do in the Roundtable, is try to take scripture that we're preaching on Sunday morning and try to make it applicable, because at the end of the day, sometimes it's difficult when you can't ask questions or you can't talk through or you can't have discussion, and it allows us to be able to have a view or an idea of what scripture's like and how we can apply it to our lives. And so we'll tap into Nick's wisdom and talk together about how we're going to be able to apply that part of scripture together. So Nick, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Why don't you tell us a little bit? Beforehand, we were talking, and so Nick was in here, Nick Wilson, and we were like, I was going to introduce you as Nick the Manure Man Kopke, because, but I got your tagline wrong. So your tagline is?
They dump it, we pump.
So Nick, and he'll tell you a little bit about this, but part of his business, or if not all of his business, he does manure hauling. And so that's one way that we got to know each other. So tell us a little bit about you. Tell us about your family, what's going on in your life. And
yeah, well, I tell you, I'm just a C-minus guy most days. You know, my good days, maybe C-plus. I've got a wife of 12 years this year. Her name's Holly. She's a blast. She's good stuff. I certainly don't deserve her. I like how you always speak highly of Sherry. I certainly
like the backbone, right?
Oh,
like a good wife is a backbone.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. So she keeps me grounded. She's, you know, behind every man's an even better woman, right? So
how old are you?
I'll be 36 this year.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So yeah, 12 years in, August. August 15th
so
will be 12 years.
Were you guys high school sweethearts?
No, I wish we were. That would have saved a lot of
would have saved a lot of problems.
A lot of heartache and a lot of problems elsewhere. But no, we were not high school sweethearts, but we did go to high school together. She is a year below me.
Where'd you go to high school?
Manchester. North Manchester, born and raised. I left for a while. I did a couple year stint at Vincennes University. I worked for Strauss in Pennsylvania for about 9 months, did sales and service out there.
Really?
And yeah. And then
when you went to Vincennes, was it for
agribusiness?
Really?
A lot of agri, not so much business. but Vincennes was really good for me. When I left Manchester High School, I was wearing cargo khaki pants and Doc Martin boots. And when I came home from Vincennes, I was wearing slim fit Wranglers and cowboy boots.
That a boy.
Yeah.
You got the good switch going on.
I did. So.
And then ended up in Pennsylvania?
I ended up in Pennsylvania. Doing sales and service.
Did Strauss have a lot of stuff out there?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Gosh, I had 5 or 6,000 calves on feed there.
Wow.
But pretty, you know, just ordering feed, ordering meds, you know, and pulling blood.
Okay. So you had to go around, visit barns,
and
visit everybody.
I had a weekly, weekly or bi-weekly rotation. Made some good relationships there.
Were a lot of guys out there Amish groups?
Yeah, that was it.
I don't think. Okay.
I had maybe one English guy.
And what part of Pennsylvania?
Central.
Okay.
Happy Valley, to be specific. But I got up into kind of south central New York. Romulus, New York, went up in there.
Because I feel like we went out to Lancaster one time.
Yeah, I didn't get down there. That was more, there's a lot of veal in Lancaster. That's more of like the Marcho crew. But that was more southeast of me. So.
Okay, so went out to Pennsylvania and then you came back and that's how you met your wife?
Well, I came back from Pennsylvania and moved to Bearcat 2.
Okay.
Which you were involved there for a while.
That's the State Road 16 place?
Yeah, I lived there. No, I'm sorry. I went there first after Vincennes. I went to Bearcat 2, the 16 farm, after Vincennes, raised a group and a half there, and then I went to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Moved home from Pennsylvania. So this is 2007. Then I move home with mom and dad. That lasted like 2 weeks. And then, so I'm still working for Strauss. So I'm doing the service thing on a local level. I was a serviceman. And then I moved to the Milky Way Farm. You probably know where that is.
Actually, I've never been to that one. I've heard about it. But that's where you were living?
Yep. Okay. I did 2 years there at the Milky Way Farm. So backing up, I used to have these parties. We call them Kopke Fest.
Okay? Really?
Yeah. So I think it was my second Kopke Fest party at the Milky Way house. This cute little brunette gal was one of the last ones there. It was late in the night, and she caught my eye, and you know that was as far as it went that night. So I was in town the next night or the next weekend, and I was friends with her brother, you know, because we went to school together.
Right.
So I knew who she was, and I was pretty chummy with her brother. So I think
so. You had the in.
I wasn't there yet. He was pretty protective. He was protective. We had a little thing at the, you know, at my house, and the next weekend or whenever it was, I think I saw her at the inn, and she found out I had a Harley, and her friends were like, hey, he's got a Harley. And so I picked, you know, I took her for a Harley ride. One thing led to another. But it was slow at first. I think it took me a month to kiss her for the first time.
Wow.
But things escalated quickly after that. So,
so you still have the Harley?
No, I don't. Okay. I traded that in for some work stuff.
Okay.
You know, because I was trying to get a business off the ground.
I thought you were going to say, hey, I traded it in for a minivan. Later on.
That was later on. That's coming. That's coming. So...
So you guys get dated for a while?
We did. So Holly stayed the night one night with me at Milky Way, and she's been with me ever since.
Okay.
Unfortunately we did live in sin there for a while. We were together for a year, engaged for a year.
Okay.
And so we started dating on the 15th. We got engaged on August 15th, and we got married on August 15th.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you guys lived at Milky Way. And,
that's correct.
And you still ran it while you were, that was a part of
the
job?
I never worked at the Milky Way farm.
But there was a house there.
That's correct. I just rented that from Strauss.
Okay.
So let's see here. We got married in 2009, moved to a farm closer to where we're at now. We're there a couple of years, da-di-da-di-da-di. So I got two kids. Emerson is 6. Ellie is 10. And they're awesome, great kids. Just the prettiest girls you've ever seen.
And so will they go to Manchester?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's all that same area that you're in.
So right now we actually live in the house Holly grew up in.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So we bought that when Ellie was like a year old. So we've been there 9 years.
Okay.
And then Holly's parents, a.k.a. my neighbors, are my neighbors.
Right.
And it's a great dynamic. They, you know, there was a 4-acre lot. They split it. They built a brand new house and then sold us their house. So they're right there, and they're just awesome people. It's, you know, people always tease me like, oh, it must suck living next to your in-laws. And it's like, I feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
Living next to me. Like, I'm raiding the fridge. I'm shooting guns. There's stray bullets around, you know.
Right. I mean, again, there's always that. I mean, people can say that, but there are some great benefits to being by your in-laws.
Oh, it's
building
awesome.
Building babysitters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Opportunities to be able to get together,
absolutely.
Build relationships. Your kids can build relationships with grandparents that we wouldn't normally have. So, I mean, they can say whatever, but
no,
there are some advantages to living beside.
It's an excellent dynamic. My mother-in-law, she's a powerhouse. She did babysit full-time there for a couple years before the kids went to school. Of course, Jeff, my father-in-law, you know, he's awesome. So, yeah, no regrets. Love it. Wouldn't change anything.
Right. Did Holly go to school?
Holly did not. She went to vocational school through high school, and she started working the day after she graduated high school.
So she was around the area.
She's never left.
And ended up at the Kopke Fest.
Yes. The Kopke Fest.
The story that you can tell your kids someday. How did mom and dad meet?
Yeah.
When they ask you about the Kopke Fest, so you can tell them how it went. And how that all worked.
Yeah. So, what else? The daughters.
Tell us what.
Oh, okay.
What are you doing in life?
No, what are we doing in life?
Yeah. So tell me, what do you love to do?
Well, so this weekend we went snow skiing.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I grew up snow skiing. My parents took me and my brother Jared snow skiing, you know, all through school. And so, like I said, my kids are 6 and 10, and this year was the first time that we took them snow skiing.
Okay.
Okay, so me and Holly have only been like once or twice since we got together, so it's like, okay, this is the year. I'm going to take, because every year I'm like, I'm going to take your girls skiing, it's going to be great. So we finally did it. We ended up going 4 times as a family, and then me and Holly went on another adult trip, So me and Holly have been skiing 5 times this year, which far exceeded anything. We just went to Bittersweet, which is just a couple, 2.5 hours straight north.
See, Isaac, the good parents take their kids skiing.
Well, we started at Swiss Valley, which is more like, it's kind of the, you know, it's smaller, it's closer.
Yeah, so as a family, we've been skiing we used to go every Christmas since the kids were little.
Yeah.
And we'd ski, you know, over Christmas all the time. Yeah. We'd go 2 or 3 times a year. We've been to Ellicottville in New York, out to Colorado, up to Boyne.
Awesome.
You know, Petoskey,
Cabrafay,
Bittersweet, Swiss Valley, you know, all those places. And Isaac said, Dad, like, this is a year we need, because he has his own skis.
Oh, yeah.
All of our kids have their own stuff. He's like, this is a year we need to go. You need to take a ski in. But see, good dads, they take their kids skiing. Loser dads have empty promises, like your dad. But this is what. So Brady has a friend that he went to school with out in Colorado. So last year, his wife bought Brady and Jace heliskiing stuff. So it's like backcountry, go up on a helicopter, get to the top of the mountain, and they ski down. Well, they couldn't do it because of COVID, so he just got back from the trip.
Yeah,
took him out there. Went out, they did the helicopter ride clear to the top of these mountains, 13,000 feet up.
Thanks.
And then they ski. It takes them about 1.5 hours to get down. And again, I looked at it. He showed me pictures. I'm like, that's some extreme skiing.
Well, I always, you know, we like to water ski too. You know, I'll get to that. But I always tell people we're like six-pack skiers. You know, we got, not much happens around here until we at least get a six-pack. I mean, that's exaggerating a little, but I mean, you know, basically me just saying we don't take it that serious.
Yeah,
you know,
right. But it is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
I love to ski.
I'm still using the skis my dad got me in 5th grade.
I
promise. Yeah,
they're not too short. Or were you this tall in 5th grade?
It's kind of. I've always been a back row kid. I was always a red striper on the football team. So,
in Huntington, it's the black striper.
I was a red striper. Couldn't touch the ball because I was too chubby.
Yeah,
so
you're too
I've
big.
Always had.
But
a
you've always been since 5th grade. You've been 6'2".
I've been
6'3" or whatever you are.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm 6'2", but
that's impressive that you can still ski on the skis you had since the 5th grade.
I know.
You just got new boots.
I didn't.
What?
I know. I think, well,
what kind of boots did your dad buy you?
Well,
in fifth
I remember
grade?
Always putting on a bunch of socks. So we obviously bought the boots big, right?
Yeah, right. Which is a great idea because they're expensive.
Yeah. So, we talked about spring break, maybe head north, maybe up to Cabrafay or to Boyne. I've never been up there. So
that's great. You'd love them both.
So if the snow holds out, we'll do that.
Yeah. Because Boyne Highlands or Boyne Mountains, like 5 hours, something like that.
It might be 6. I don't
Is
know.
It?
It's a ways up there.
Either way, it's worth it.
Yeah.
You'd like it.
Yeah.
You know, little longer runs and a little bit better snow. And it's a neat area.
We're water skiers, we're boaters.
Okay.
We got a lake house, and when I tell people we have a lake house, it's like it's a cabin. It's cute, it's tiny. It's
what lake are you guys on?
We're on the main basin's Lake Tippecanoe, but our place is on Oswego.
Yeah. Okay.
So up there we're neighbors with my parents.
Okay.
So we summer with my parents and we winter with my in-laws.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome.
So we were on, was it Big Barbie? A couple years ago, we rented a house on Big Barbie.
Yeah, we call that the working man lake.
So the funny thing was, is like, hey, I want to own a lake cottage.
Absolutely.
Like, I love the water. We've boated for all of our lives, but just didn't seem like I could get it figured out. Well, anyway, so I said, well, let's rent a cottage just to see what it's like to be on the lake all summer long. I didn't stay one night.
Are you serious?
We would drive up. Boat after work.
Because it's too close to home, right?
Yeah. So then at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, I drove home, went to work the next day, and then drive back up.
No, we're pretty good at it. We're real committed as a family. And obviously, my wife loves it. And my oldest daughter, Ellie, is just, she's this will be like her 4th or 5th summer on skis and wakeboards. And
yeah. So is she a wakeboarder?
Oh,
Are you a wakeboarder?
I would say right now I'm really into barefooting.
Yeah.
But slalom skiing's kind of always been my passion.
Really?
So I got a neighbor at the lake. Who she goes every day through the week. She's a doctor. She barefoots probably 6 to 7 days a week.
Off a boom or deep
long
water?
Line. Oh no.
No way.
Yeah.
You can deep water.
On a good day.
Listen, that is impressive.
It's I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I'm gearing up. Like, we're getting there because as soon as that ice gets off, she's going out.
No way.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be like this pumped up about it, but she's like, you know, there's a whole group of guys that go with this gal, and her husband calls all of us her boyfriends. I mean, there's like dozens of us. You know, there's like this core group, and I'm like a day or two a week on at best, but there's like a core group of dudes through the week, and then she cycles some dudes on the weekends. She's so intense.
Now listen, that is that Nick the Manure Man Kopke can barefoot on a long line. I am seriously impressed. Like that is
it's a rush.
I mean, it's been since I was in high school, since I long line. Now I just go off a boom.
Get out there, man.
Yeah, I mean anything to
take the play. And I would probably be the same way, but she is like she's like she doesn't give you an option.
No, right.
She's like,
and what's her boat?
Get in the water. She's got a little 19-foot Malibu response. It might be 20. I don't know. You know, direct drive.
Yeah.
Nothing too special. But she just
nice.
She has
boat.
Like 1,500 hours on it. She just loves that wake. Like, she'll never get rid of that boat.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah, the other thing I can't – we did wake surfing this year.
Yeah.
And I can't get up on a wakeboard.
Yeah.
But I can't snowboard either. I can only snow ski.
Correct.
I can slalom ski on two, barefoot. Mm-hmm. I can't get on a wakeboard. I hate the stupid things. All the kids are good at it.
Do you get on the surfboard, though?
Huh? I can get on the surfboard.
Yeah, surfboards, for whatever
it's
reason, are
different.
Easier to get
That's
up
what
on.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Like last year, Brady was doing backflips on his wakeboard, you know, and I'm like, it's so easy. It's like you just pop right up. You just do this and let the water be whatever, and you're going to pop right up. I'm like, there ain't no popping up. This body ain't popping out of the water. I don't know what's going on with it, but I'm sinking or something's happening.
Come
There's
on.
A wall of water. When I get back there, the wall of water.
Now, the surfing thing has really changed. It's like changed the boating industry. I think my boat's a 2012, so it's kind of like.
What do you guys got?
It's a Supra.
Yeah.
And so I think 2012, 13, that's when surfing was really taking off. So my boat isn't really too set up for it. So when we want to surf, we go find another obnoxious boat on the lake. You know, we got friends here and there, and it's like, I'm not filling up my bags and this and that. My dad likes to do it.
He likes to, I swear, when I still had Facebook in the summer, I would see your dad still slalom skiing.
Yeah, he still slalom skis. He'll be 66 this year. He went snow skiing with us over the weekend. We call him the Tick.
The what?
The Tick, because he's always he because all summer long, like Thursday night through whatever, hey, we're going skiing, and Dad's like, all right, I'm in, you know. Okay. So he just, you know, it's the Tick.
And he's amazing that he's that still in great shape.
Yeah.
Still takes care of his body.
He's doing good. And so every you know, this spring, you know, the last few years he's been starting off on two.
And then dropping?
Yeah, and then he drops, and then he's just got to get his confidence there. You know, I know he can do it. He knows he can do it, but he starts on two, drops, and then, you know, another week or two, he's starting off on one. But he drags a foot when he starts off.
Does
on
he
one.
Really?
Yeah, because that's the way he learned in the 70s, and he had like a 55-horse outboard, whatever. You know, he had to drag a foot. And, you
right, because they couldn't get you up out of the water or start off of the dock.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, they did some of that stuff. So does your wife like both, water and snow? Or
I've got to deal with her. She skis once a year to shut me up. So, and we go.
Water skis.
Yeah, water skis. So we started a Dale Hollow trip 3 years ago. So the pinnacle of our summer, the pinnacle of our boating season is in Dale Hollow with three of our couples.
And you guys do a houseboat?
We do a houseboat. And we have got the coolest friends, man. We do oh my gosh, we've done ice curling, we've done axe throwing,
You've done ice what?
Ice curling, you know, with the Olympics and the brooms and the. You know what I'm talking about? There's a dedicated ice it's the only dedicated curling ice in Fort Wayne.
So you're the guy that like on the Olympics you put your foot behind you and you kind of like
So we took
Do you wear tights?
No.
Don't they wear tights or something on the Olympics?
This was another one of the six pack things, you know?
And then somebody gets the broom out and figure it out.
Yeah. And you know, we go-kart,
That's neat. So you got
like
a good
axe throw. Oh yeah, we've got an awesome and to go on a houseboat with some people, you have to be very good friends with them, right?
Oh, because everybody's living on the same boat.
It's tight.
Oh,
I'm talking tight, bud. It is tight in there. So that is the highlight of our boating season. And this year, this year will be our fourth year. So
that's
Holly
awesome.
Skis in Dale Hollow, and all her friends try at least once.
Okay. Then the others just hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's awesome.
Yep.
So, Nick, tell me a little bit about, because I honestly don't know that I've ever heard this story before. So tell me a little bit about your spiritual journey.
Oh.
Like, I don't know. Like, I only know, so Nick's in a small group at TADS, and I've told him this.
Well, it's not so much a small group.
Yeah. I mean, there's like 25, 30
Well,
guys.
There's, I would say there's always at least 30, give or take, but probably 45, 50 people cycling.
Right. It's really a neat group. I awesome. Love the group.
You know, you said something about the about that men's group. We were there Monday, and you said in your sermon about how this isn't normal.
No, it's not
like,
sure.
That upset me.
Yeah, I mean.
Because it should be, right?
No, well, for sure, the people who should lead that whole idea of gathering together to get prepared to do what we need to do should be men, right? Because that's the calling that God puts on our life. Yeah. But for whatever reason, usually men, well, I mean, you could look at this in the history of the church, right? Men are usually even absent from the church, let alone to get into, you know, a
grandma
small group
took me to church or mom or
right. Like the dads are just missing. But again, so Nick, and I've told him this before, you know, adds a lot of insight and wisdom and clarity. Sometimes I'm not the most clear on what I'm trying to say out in small group. I'm not sure that
you usually say, does that make sense?
Yeah, I do, because I'm like, it made sense in my mind, but then I'm looking around the room like, I might have missed that one, you know, and so Nick brings a lot of clarity. So I've really enjoyed, you know, Nick's insight and wisdom in the small group. I don't know I've ever heard like your spiritual journey. Like if you grew up in a church and you've always known Christ or I mean,
So well, I tell you, it's not that exciting, but it's, it's nonetheless, it's a story. And, I've got a great family, I've always, they've always took me to church.
So you did grow up in church.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, the Congregational Christian Church, the bright light at 4th and Walnut, North Manchester, Indiana. Pastor J.P. Freeman. Now, he's got a story. You want to hear
this? This was the pastor of your church when you were a kid.
Yeah, J.P. Freeman. He's got it. That guy, he owned the Main View in town.
What's the Main View?
It's a bar downtown. Oh. I mean, this guy, he's got a story.
Wow.
And he's still around. I see him every now and then. We have some good talks. But, Congregational Christian Church all my life. Now, we got into school. I do remember getting into junior high and high school and, mom and dad kind of slowing down. I don't know why,
What
sports, I suppose, bitty basketball, all that stuff.
Right. What did you call it?
In Manchester on Sundays, we play bitty basketball.
Bitty?
Yeah. Bitty basketball. It's like youth basketball.
Bitty. Like,
bitty.
How did that name
bitty
come?
I have no, it was
somebody
it
named
was,
bitty.
It was bitty basketball 30 years ago. So
I mean, that just seems like a
I cannot tell you the history on the bitty.
No, I was like,
bitty
I wonder
basketball.
If there's some guy named Bitty that started this. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
So bitty basketball got started and maybe church went down
potentially
in priority a little bit.
So great family, like, great grandparents, like a lot of great influences in my life. A lot of good people, man. And I remember getting involved with campus life. At a young, at that point, I think we had a campus life in junior high.
Really?
Now we don't because there's such a shortage of those directors.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of directors in and out. Maybe we can talk more about that later. But,
right.
So at that point, we had 7th and 8th grade campus life, and this guy's name was Nate, and he was just this big guy. And Nate would come down to the weight room during my lunch period and it'd be like, all right, Nate, I want to squat. And he'd lift that weight up off the ground. He'd put it on my back. And I was just like a seventh grader doing squatting in the junior high weight room,
right.
And I just remember that Nate being there.
But we all have to remember that you are 6'2 at this time and half a man grade.
I've always been a larger framed individual.
So anyway, so Nate, campus life guy.
Yeah, so, and I don't ever really remember a whole lot going on. I just remember these great people being in my life, freshman, sophomore year, you get more involved in campus life. It was probably more because of girls.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a freshman, these upper class girls coming to pick me up to take me to campus life.
Hey, now and there's an in.
Looking back, like these girls were just trying to give me Jesus, but I'm like, these girls are into me. Right?
No, that is
you know
a story
what I'm saying?
Right there. Yeah, like
you know
these girls are interested in me and they're really
they're just trying to give
this kid needs Jesus.
They're just trying to give this chunky little freshman kid Jesus, right?
Oh, so, that's good.
Yeah, I was always real involved in campus life and Fast forward senior year. Our senior year was tough. It started out with a death. I don't think school was in yet. I think he died in August. His name was Jared Aragood. So I would have been 18. I assume he was 18. We're going in our senior year. I wasn't close with him at the time. He had kind of moved away and was going through whatever struggles he was going through. But we were close. Probably, you know, junior high, for sure. I remember being close to them. But he died of bacterial meningitis. And then...
What?
Yeah. And then I wish I was better with timelines. A month or two later, a junior died of the same thing, and his name was Kyle Music. And then a month or two later, a sophomore died of, she had leg surgery, and she threw a blood clot, and it took her, it killed her. So we were, and this was all within months, you know, of my senior year, you know. So there was it was tough there for a while, but right after Jared passing, I remember reaching out to Chris Rickelman was our campus life guy. So I talked about this Monday. Mm-hmm. You know, my relationship with Chris grew, and he met with me. He was very intentional with me, and you know, that ultimately led to me asking a lot of tough questions and us praying together, and me ultimately accepting Jesus Christ. So that's, you know, I would call that my salvation story. Mm-hmm. Right there. So,
yeah. And then again, from that point on, and I mean, I think that all of us are like the journey from the time of our salvation to where we are today is just always an interesting journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Like, that's when it starts. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we've talked a lot about that, about following Christ. And,
right.
You know, I've always believed. So to answer your earlier question about, you know, I've always believed in Jesus.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't ever remember a time in my life where I always remember seeing at all my family members' houses, there was always Bible. So I've always been a believer. But yeah, following is always, that's always a bumpy road. That's for sure. And I always like to hear people's stories about I'm trying to get better
Well, I think it's the key that we talk about all the time. Yeah. And that's why I've said, you know, everybody asks us, like, why do you have on staff at Life Church a person who gets paid to be the storyteller? Like, that's Nick's job here is he's a storyteller. That's his. And I'm like, because that's what people need to hear. Like, people need to hear the stories of where God's working and what he's doing. Because a lot of times part of our growth comes from watching somebody else saying, wow, like, I can do it, or God's still working, or I can get through, or I can see. And so for somebody to be able to see a story from somebody else's life, to like, I can learn from that, and I can understand that. And or, you know, somebody stuck in a place or saying, I don't think I could ever get over this, but then they watch a story or see a story or hear somebody talk about, like, I've been that journey, you know, and I can help you through, right, you know, that place. So I always think it's cool to be able to have the opportunity for people to be able to share their story and talk through it. So,
yeah.
Okay.
And I got baptized, I think, just right before me and Holly got married, I got baptized. And we go to Liberty Mills Church with Brethren. We never talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're members. I think we joined years ago. Yeah. The whole member thing's kind of gone to the wayside.
Yeah,
but
I'm
pretty sure we're members. Our picture's in the directory. But we've been going to Liberty Mills Church with the Brethren since me and Holly started dating. She was born and raised there. And during the summers, back to the lake thing, the water thing, we do from Memorial Day to Labor Day, Leesburg United Methodist Church puts a lake service on.
Do they really?
So every Sunday morning at 7 o'clock, me and Pastor Rob set up a sound system on a pontoon. And it's so cool because I get to spend time with Pastor Rob. And this guy's awesome.
Hmm.
I mean, I love Pastor Rob. He preaches the truth in the Bible and draws a heck of a crowd in Lake Tippecanoe. We've had up to 500 people attend these.
So everybody just pulls their boat up?
These boats, and it's right at Petona Bay Campground. So you can come by shore, obviously, you know, you can drive, park, or, you know, there's a campground there. There's a lot of people setting up chairs. But yeah, a lot of boats. And it's very weather driven, you know,
on
a dreary,
sure,
chillier. But we've had good holiday weekends with almost 500 people.
That's amazing.
It is so cool, man.
Does he have a church that?
Yeah, Leesburg United Methodist is the church, and that's, you know, that's who puts it on.
So do they stop what they're doing, or is it at a different time, or?
That's a good question.
I mean? I wonder what he does.
Well,
like,
last year, I think, so he leaves right away. He leaves right away and goes to the church and does his regular service.
Okay, so then he has another service that he does at the church.
And that's where my parents, Randy and Chris, are members, is there at Leesburg United. So.
Okay. What, do they live at the lake all the time?
Yeah, yeah, they're full time. Yeah, they moved there in 06, 2006.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's where, so Troy Dyson was on.
Yep. Yes.
Tippy, was he close to you guys?
Absolutely.
Oh, so.
Yeah, and that's where, me and Troy grew close there.
Yeah.
Because I would paddle, I'd get on my paddle board or, we would boat in, whatever, swim over, walk over. He was just kind of across the channel. And there,
He wasn't that far from you guys.
No, okay. I could, you could see his place. He's across the lake in a channel. So this summer is going to be tough not pulling up to the dock and seeing Troy.
Yeah, right.
A little smile and probably a Coors Light here. He's like, here. It's like, no, I'm Troy. Yeah, no. And so I'm going to miss that. That's going to be tough. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had been up there for a decent amount of time, right?
Just a couple summers.
Oh, but he was there
quite a few years ago, so.
Yeah, and then he was on another lake for a while and then came back.
So, I've been thinking a lot about Kelly lately and Steven and the Dyson family for sure. So.
Right. Yeah, and I think, the transition of trying to figure out how to deal with the loss, let alone a spouse and or a child, I mean, that's a tough place to go into.
Yep.
So we're going to talk a little bit about scripture, so what we talked about. So we are in a series called Under the In God We Trust, and the whole idea of this series is I think we're living in a time where trusting people has become somewhat of or trusting our government. I think we see a lot of people who are like, I can't trust this person or I can't trust this person. And so the idea of the series is to say, well, we've probably had some misplaced trust. If we thought that presidents or senators or politicians can change the world anyway.
Or pastors.
Yeah, or right? pastors. Yeah. Yeah, putting in our hope in places that it shouldn't be, and really living in a time where things that we trusted in the past are sometimes going away, just like the whole COVID thing. We would have never expected in life that churches wouldn't be able to meet.
Right.
You know what I mean? We never would have thought you would come to a place where you go a whole summer or, some churches for 8 months.
Some churches still
are closed and not open. So the idea of this whole series was to say, well, we should probably recenter ourselves, get back to a trusting God. And so this week we talked a little bit about influence. So the idea was that what is truly influencing us? And at times, understanding that culture probably has a pretty good hold on us when it comes to influence. So, like we talked about entertainment. So when you look at what entertains you, is it influenced by God or is it influenced by culture? Or, we looked at your money, what we do with our money. Is it influenced by God or influenced by culture? And we even talked about some stories. We were talking about this before. So I brought up this idea of, have you ever been at a party before, people were under?
Yeah, never.
Right. What do you mean the Kopke Fest? You met your wife.
It wasn't that kind of party.
That's not a party?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to say that on the air or what?
You tell me. I don't know. I wasn't given any guidelines before we started.
Hey, Isaac, are there guidelines? No guidelines. So anyway, so the idea, and I told you it was funny because I said, have you ever been around people who are under the influence of alcohol, how they act, how they become your best friend and love you, man, and how all of a sudden they put the beer goggles on and
absolutely.
People who maybe weren't as attractive as you thought before, but after four or five beers, they become more attractive. And then you ask them the stories the next day. Hey, do you remember? Like, man, I don't remember or didn't know that I acted like. Yeah. So I brought it back to this idea that I wonder if that's the way we are today. Like, we don't even know that we're under the influence of culture and not under the influence of God. And so how do we reset that? How do we get to the place where, God is, the center of our influence to the best of our ability, and how do we go down that road? So we looked at, this is the time where.
Get your glasses on.
Get my glasses on because I can't see anything. But in 1 Peter 5, that's where we were looking at to be able to understand this. And so in one of the things it talked about, in the same way, you who are younger, submit yourself to your elders. So talk to me a little bit about, did you have or have you had in your life somebody who is older than you with wisdom? Like, you've named a couple names through this, but have you ever had that person where, like, when you need spiritual authority in your life, or you need somebody to come under you, that you do you have any experience with that, or can you comment on that at all?
You mean like seeking out somebody?
Yeah, like in his, he says, you know, if we're going to get down the road of understanding influence, the first thing we have to understand is submitting to authority, right? Because we can only be influenced by what we submit to, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you can only be influenced by what you submit to. And so the idea is, if we're going to submit to the authority of God, you know, or submit under the influence of, the first thing we have to get used to is to submitting to authority at all.
Yeah, so like your parents. So if you're not submissive to your parents and or elders, right?
Right.
How's that going to reflect on your relationship with Christ?
Right, because it's a struggle. Like, if we struggle trusting somebody who is older than us or somebody that knows more than us with authority, how will we be able to just say, but I trust God, like, and I submit to his authority and his influence? And so, like, for me, so Vic is a guy that's, he's older than I am. He's went down the road. He came over here with us when we planted the church, meaning he still lives in Bluffton, but he traveled, you know, came over here every week and met with me every week. And still to this day, meets with me every week. And I would call him somebody who is a spiritual authority. He's a guy that can look at me and say, you're wrong. You're going down the wrong road.
Yeah.
You need to change what you're doing. Your thinking's off.
Yeah.
And I have said that it's okay. Like, you speak that way into my life because it's important. You know,
so,
for me,
you're getting really a lot important. Of accountability from this guy.
Right, because you don't want it from everybody, right? No, I'm saying that. Think about this. You don't want everybody to be your spiritual authority.
Sure.
Not everybody can do that. But right. So have you ever had experience, like, I have this guy in my life, and I've given him permission to speak into my life? And
yeah. Well, definitely here, you know, I don't, whatever, last 10 years. I mean, I don't have anybody that's walked with me since day one that I've been seeking advice with. I'm, you know, my dad's always been a good one.
Hmm. Well, that's exciting. You
know,
your dad can
yeah,
be a,
well, you, you well, know. You know, more business-wise, ethics.
Yeah.
I've, you know, dad's happy with his walk and his and where he's at, and I've wanted to take it a little farther. I would say nothing against what he's doing or not doing, but I've maybe gotten a little more serious about things and wanted to go farther. So, and I've just had a lot of good people in my life, right? A lot of good Pastor Kelly. I've been with him 14, 15 years. You know, he married me in Holly. We've done counseling with him, postmarital counseling, obviously premarital, but
yeah.
Some postmarital stuff.
So that's too, interesting. Though. Like, for you, and I think that's a, because for me, it would be a different story. Like, mine would be one or two people that I've had, but you would say that you've had multiple
Absolutely.
People. And here's the cool thing about what you're saying is it's multiple people at multiple times. You know what I mean? So
yes.
It's not like I had one person, he went all the way through for me. It's like one person for this season of life and another person for another season of life.
And I'm always looking, like, who wants to help Nick?
Right.
Because I need help. And I really, I lean on my friends probably a lot harder than they lean. Like, I'm pretty hard on my friends because I want to treat my friends and hold them accountable to how I want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always the same.
Hmm.
Cause I want people to be hard on me and tough on me and say, hey,
right.
I think you shouldn't be doing this. You're going down the wrong path.
Right. Yeah. Because I think we would both agree. With no accountability, life doesn't go well.
It's a mess, especially men.
Right. Like, you got to have somebody that you have. And again, at least this is my personality. I'm not going to listen to everyone, you know, because I'm not going to sit there and take it from everyone, but I'm going to take it from a few.
Absolutely.
And you have every right to share with me and to say with me, you're off. You need to fix it. What you said, what you did, you've missed the point, you know, that type of thing. And so having accountability, and that's what we would say to the audience too, right? Like, if you're a man who doesn't have accountability, or if you're a woman who doesn't have accountability, or somebody that can be speaking into your life, you need to get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so then it goes on from an influence standpoint, and he says, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another, because God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves before therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he can lift you up in due time. So one of the things we talked about is this whole idea that we need to clothe ourselves with humility. And the interesting thing is, like, from a scriptural standpoint, when he talks about clothe yourself, it means at all times approach everything with humility, right? Just like he did with the servant's towel, washed the disciples' feet. He said, everything that we approach should be approached in the way, like, I'm here to serve you. I'm not here to get anything out of you. I'm here to be like, what can I do for you to be able to help you in your journey? And he says, like, you need to clothe yourself with that. Like, it needs to be a part of your nature. Mm-hmm. Like, the nature of a Christian person, if we want to live under the influence of God, has to be humble and has to clothe themselves in humility. In fact, Vic, one of the things he told me early on in working with people, because, you know, when you work in a church, might not be any different in the manure business. When you work with people, you know, there are times where it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't know. You know, the whole, like, serve them, but mm-hmm. they would be okay to beat you over the head with a ball bat type of a thing, you know, and there's no, like, back and forth. But he said, if you live with a couple principles, one, you know, that you would understand life's not fair. You know, people are weird and love's the bottom line. So if you believe that life is supposed to be fair, you're argue with God for all of your life. People are weird. If you think people aren't weird, you're going to argue for all of your life with people, you know, in that concept. But love should always be the bottom line. And with it, he said, remember, every time you approach somebody, they're wearing a sign. And the sign says, make me feel important. So if you approach people or instances from a humility standpoint instead of a positional standpoint, then the chances of you having an impact on their life is going to be great. I mean, do you feel the same way?
Yeah.
Have you ever had those experiences?
Yeah, you know, I was just on the way here today, I was talking to my brother, and, you know, he's in sales now, and we're talking about relationships. Mm-hmm. He's made a lot of new relationships the last few months, and, you know, a lot of relationships with some CEOs of some pretty big companies, and so we're talking about relationships, and we've been talking about relationships a lot, about men's group, and, you know, are those relationships reflecting your relationship with Jesus Christ? Mm. You know, are you intentional with those people? Are you looking at them when, you know, they're talking, or are you listening? Are you making them feel important?
Right.
You know, so, you know, he's a salesman, but, and I told him on my way here, I said, you know, you just go around, like, making these relationships, and if you get to sell them something, it's like a byproduct.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
Oh, I can't talk now, Steve.
See, no phone calls on this phone, and he might have had like four or five of them.
He's a customer of mine.
No, so. I know. That's what I'm saying. You're way important, you know, in the midst of this. So, yeah, so you would believe in humble ourselves, serve people like that, customer service.
And I'm
because you're in the customer service business.
I am in the customer service. The service industry. I haven't, you know, I always tell people I am in the service industry. I don't say the customer service industry, but service. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe I should think of it like that because I'm filling their needs. But so we're watching the show The Chosen.
Okay.
So you forgot to ask me that. The question when
we
started.
What are you watching on Netflix? So The Chosen.
So you caught me at a good time. We're watching the show The Chosen. Are you familiar with that?
I've seen the clips from it, but
okay,
I've never
watched
it.
Okay, so you got to download the app. Maybe somebody that is smarter than I am could figure it out. I downloaded the app, and you got to, like, AirPlay it on your TV or whatever.
Oh, so the only way you can watch it is from an app?
Is from The Chosen app. So if anybody knows of a better way to watch it,
Tell us on the YouTube channel the better way to watch it.
It's kind of a struggle. So on The Chosen right now, we're on, like, episode 8, and it's going through the Gospels, right? Mm-hmm. So right now Jesus is going through Capernaum.
Okay.
And, you know, he healed the guy through the roof. Mm-hmm. He healed the leper out there in the woods. Tad Eads is calling.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Tad. So we're talking about humility. And I just, you know, last night I watched Jesus, or a man portraying Jesus, mm-hmm. on the TV, you know, and they're in the red district, which is like Pontiac Street or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, I don't, you know,
yeah,
you know, how, you know, however you want to call it.
Right.
And, you know, he's down there, you know, the Pharisees won't even go down there. Right. And then here's Jesus healing these dudes.
Right.
So, you know, you're talking about humility, and, you know, I just can't get over the fact how humble Jesus actually was.
Right.
And, right. you know, the more I figure that out and the more I learn about that, it's no wonder, like, the Pharisees couldn't get down with him.
Because right. it's like, because they were for sure.
This guy's too humble, and he's down here in a part of town we don't run with.
Right. Right.
You know?
Well, and it goes with what he says next in the scripture, because he wants us to be humble. And it's not that he doesn't like proud people. He opposes them. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he says God opposes the proud. So it's yeah. not even like if you're proud, he's like, oh, it's a bummer. You need to change your personality trait. He's like, I will oppose you if you are proud. If you are a person like a Pharisee or a Sadducee, or even if you're a person, and I tell, like, be careful once you start viewing yourselves as better than other people. Mm. Like, if you get to that place where you start viewing yourself as superior or better, or you've done it right and they always do it wrong, I think you better check yourself, because the opposition as a Christian people person coming from God is evident. Like, he's not going to just let you go, and he's not going to let you be a proud person. Like, he's going to oppose you until the point that you remember. And yeah. And
we need people in our life to tell us.
No, absolutely.
Hey, you're being a little too proud. And I'll never forget this. When I was, you know, I had a real slow and rough start in the business, but things were taking off, making a little money. My dad pulled me aside. Nick, you're starting to, you know, you're slipping. Mm. You're getting a little cocky. You're this, you're that. I'll never forget that. Mm. And I'm you know, I was mad.
Right.
I was right. mad at the time. But. you know, I'm very thankful for that, and I'm glad he did it. So.
Right. Because, again, the thing that we got to be careful of is that at the end of the day, if we stay in that proposition, he will humble us. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
I've been in those roads where you yeah. think that you're good.
And continue to be humbled, for right. sure. I mean, that's right. that's always going to be there.
Right, right, and needing that in our lives, yeah. you know. And then, again, we're running out of time, but we get to the place where then Scripture tells us that if we're going to live in this spot, if we're going to live under the influence of Christ, you need to know there's an enemy, you know. And I think that that's something that's so much overlooked, that there's an enemy that wants to devour you. And here's what we talked about, and I think I want to make sure we understand this, that he's not there to bite you or hurt you. He's there to devour you.
Destroy
so,
you.
Yeah, so as a Christian person, you need to know that he does it in a couple different ways. One is to distract you by things that don't matter, mm-hmm. right? Get you focused on the things that at the end of life are just going to burn up,
yeah.
right? So you're so focused on material things.
Anxiety, that, stress.
Yeah, I mean, all of that stuff is going to burn in the end, you mm-hmm. know? And so if you spend your whole life worrying about it, at the end of your life, it's not going to matter.
Right.
Then he goes to and attacks the only thing that matters, which is relationships. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this on Sunday. He starts with infighting in brothers and sisters in Christ, arguing about things that don't matter, you know, in the end. Then he goes to our marriages, like if he can destroy our marriages, and then he goes to our kids. But he's very strategic with this. And I think as men in this conversation, we need to realize what our part in all of that is, right? Like, it's our role to understand we can't get caught fighting over things that don't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, brothers in Christ getting caught over arguing about things inside of the church or outside of the church that are like, does anybody really care whether the carpet's blue or green? Does anybody
yeah, that's
really?
That's getting tough, you know?
Right.
Mass, no mass.
Oh.
Vaccine, no vaccine.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of, there's always things coming down the pipe that we can argue about.
Right.
There's always more things, new things to divide us Christians. I mean, Christians have taken a huge hit the last 12 months.
Oh, for sure.
So we've certainly got a lot of healing.
Yeah,
the
political debates, you know, which side you land on a political.
It's tough out there.
You know, that and where you're at. So there's that division. And then the same thing as marriage. You know,
yeah.
we said this from the beginning. We talked about it in small group multiple times. Satan attacks the family. The first person he attacks is your wife. Mm-hmm. And as a man, it's our job to protect, stand in the gap, be at the place we need to be to help see truth, to bring our family around in that. And again, and we were talking about this before. I said in church, I said in small group, our small group of having 30, 40, 50 guys be a part of a small group is an anomaly. Like, that's not normal. And you said that's sad. But what we have to be focused on is, like, how do we start a revolution, you know, of men understanding the role? And, again, this isn't like we don't want women to be involved. We don't want women to find their place. I'm just saying.
Well, I'm not saying women aren't invited. There's just none there.
No. But the point is that at the end of the day, where the gap is, you go to church, guys are missing. You go to leadership the Christian environment, and men are missing. So I'm just saying, guys, step up.
Yes.
You know, we need you.
Yes.
You know, we need you to be Christian leaders in business, and we need you to be Christian coaches, and we need you to be, you know what I mean? You need to be that spiritual leader in lives, because we have a lot of young people today, and that's the other thing that he attacks is lives of young people.
Yes.
You know, and he's going after the kids, and kids need, because not everybody had your experience. Not everybody grew up with a dad and a mom who took you to church, and especially in this day and age, not everybody's growing up with a mom or a dad who's given them the...
I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So what do we need to do? Like to continue to not only just help these kids, but reach the parents and give them the gospel and be able to help them understand how to navigate this. Because, yeah, I mean, Satan's winning when it comes to destroying the family. Mm-hmm. There is just a complete meltdown in the family unit and the family system, and we need to be able to stand in the gap to be able to help that.
For sure.
So, all right, so any last words, wisdom, advice you want to give to our podcast listeners as we end up? And again, we're excited to be able to have Nick on here and bring him back on.
You know, to continue this relationship thing, how are you ever going to reach people? How are you ever going to be able to give people the gospel if you're not in a relationship with them? Mm. So, just be intentional with people, you know, invite somebody out to lunch, call somebody, text somebody, take time with them, you know, make them feel important, you know, make them feel special. And that's going to lead you to get an opportunity to tell them about Jesus.
Yeah.
So just please, please be intentional with people.
Yeah. And that's great advice. Obviously, what Nick said, we all need to think about, are we being intentional? I mean, you just summed it up all, you know, in a lot of different ways we can do that. But at the end of the day, we have to be thinking through, how do we intentionally show the love of Christ to people who don't yet know it, and continue to show the love of Christ to the people who do, and encourage them to do more and to build them up.
Yeah.
We're always saying we're trying to reach people, we're training people, and we're sending people out.
Yeah.
And we can be intentional about each one of those environments that we're in. So,
yeah. So, you know, God bless Life Church. You guys got a good thing going here, and I'll definitely see you Monday.
Yeah, so
for sure.
Yeah, so Nick, thank you for being on with us this week, and to all of our podcast listeners and those who are watching us online, thanks for being a part of it, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye now.